Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and we're excited to be here tonight. We've got kind of a fun show. We got a small crew, but sometimes when you have a small crew, a lot of crazy things happen, and it's fun. First of all, I want to introduce the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing, Dr. Donaway?
I'm doing great, John. Happy to be here with you.
We're glad to have you here. And, of course, nobody else can take the place of our man in West Hollywood, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you for that introduction, John. I'm doing great.
Well, good. We're certainly glad to have you here. Now, before we start on tonight's show, I want to recap something from last week. Robin McCray, by the way, Robin has a hall pass. She is in Nebraska at a Bigfoot conference and hanging out with all the muckety-mucks, and she's having a blast. She sent me a text and said it was great. She's out there with one of her best friends, Dr. Igor Bortsev, and the famed Russian Bigfoot investigator who's written a lot of books, and they're out there having a blast. So we certainly miss her, but she'll be back next week. Now, last week, we were talking about a deceased friend of Devin's, and Robin was very adamant about a particular image showing some psychic expertise. Devin, tell us what Robin was all about, and then tell us the results of checking on some of the artifacts that you had from your friends.
Sure. So Robin had, come up with an image of a blue ribbon, like you would win at, a county fair. And in the moment, it didn't ring any bells for me. I thought, I didn't have any experiences with Amy that I could think of that would have involved a blue ribbon. But later it did remind me of a song lyric that she had where she talked about Pabst Blue Ribbon. And so the next day I opened my closet and we had, after she passed away, we had helped clean out her apartment and I took some of her shirts. I kind of just grabbed a few of them that were more, iconic shirts that I knew she used to wear a lot and had worn in photos and stuff. So there was maybe 10 of them that I grabbed, but I didn't really look too carefully at them at the time. So that next morning, I opened the closet, and there right in front of me was a Pabst Blue Ribbon shirt with a pattern that just had the Pabst Blue Ribbon logo repeated a bunch of times with the blue ribbon very prominent, probably 50 times printed that blue ribbon on this shirt. So I just, kind of gave me chills, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that's definitely it, because she just wanted to let me know that she knew that I had that shirt. Hopefully she appreciates that we saved, her things and that we're planning to share them with people. So, I just took that as a sign that she was really appreciative of our efforts to save her belongings and kind of spread her art and music and her story. So that was really cool. And then another thing that you all had mentioned, I think Trey Donaway had mentioned that, it would be really unusual for there to be no coroner's report or autopsy. So we were able to find it. And so it does list that her date of death was February 8th. So that was just a really great thing to finally have that date solidified. It really bothered me that we didn't know the date, or I had never been told the exact date. So, luckily we have been able to find and confirm that record. So, a lot of things came out of that call, but those were two that were really important to me.
Devin, I just found it amazing. When blue ribbon was mentioned, I was thinking about the only blue ribbons I've ever seen are for a pie, a pie baking contest or a prize poultry or whatever at a country fair, but also maybe a race. If she's a runner or if she's a swimmer, you could get a blue ribbon by coming in first. But when you showed that picture of the Pabst Blue Ribbon, it's exactly what it was. It's just that there was a twist to it, and things aren't always clear from the other side, I guess.
Yeah,
well, it
totally.
Was just amazing that Robin picked that up. It really was. So, and I think we all had a little bit of psychic energy in that one, and it was wonderful having that show, and it's now archived forever. And it has been heard by the folks at WLSC AM and FM, because we are the midnight overnight show on Saturday night. One of our goals has been realized to be the midnight overnight show on an FM station. And we're looking right now for some additional stations to be on for Scarycast. So it's a lot of fun. It's a real adventure. And I want to thank, of course, Robin. She sent her message to us. That, sorry, she's busy, but she wishes she was with us. And I've just got to thank Dr. Trey Donaway and Devin Tate for being here with us. It's just a lot of fun on Scarycast. It's a heck of a small family, and I think we enjoy the things that we do. Now, tonight comes the lizard, the voice of the lizard man, the lizard people. We're going to talk about lizards. So Devin and I are presenting the show tonight, and boy, we can't wait to hear what Dr. Trey Donaway, the Surgeon General of Scarycast, has to say. So Devin, tell us a little bit about your topics, and get us going tonight, okay?
Sure. So I know you have your book about the lizard people, so I just wanted to chime in with the legend of the Los Angeles lizard people, which I did do a presentation on at your at the Lizard Man Festival last year, which was online, you know, due to the pandemic. But hopefully someday in the future we'll be able to do something in real life, because it's really an interesting story. And there's a lot of parallels with other lizard people stories in L.A. You know, there's a whole conspiracy theory of reptilian humanoids, specifically people in power who are, you know, rumored to actually be extraterrestrial lizard-like people, or able to take the form of a reptilian figure. But that is not really to be confused with the original lore of the L.A. lizard people, which were a race of advanced people who revered lizards. So they were not reptilian. They didn't appear as lizards, but they had a great affinity for lizards and reptiles, and allegedly they built tunnels underneath downtown Los Angeles. And that network of tunnels was ultimately in the shape of a lizard. So that's really how they kind of got their name. I think over time, these two separate theories have kind of been blended often into one. And, you know, maybe there is some reason for that. Maybe there's some truth to it. Who knows? You know, we're all here to kind of learn and see what we can figure out. But I just think it's fascinating. One of the things I just read recently is that I believe the FBI was looking into rumors that the bombing in that, I believe it was in, let's see, the Nashville bombing that happened just this last Christmas Day, 2020, apparently he was a proponent of that reptilian conspiracy theory, that he believed certain people in the media and certain celebrities and politicians were actually lizard people. So you can see how powerful these stories still, you know, persist today and influence people in their decisions, you know, sometimes harmful, but, you know, oftentimes just people being curious and wanting to know, you know, more about these legends that they've heard about. So, you know, the LA lizard people legend really occurred back in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, kind of culminating in the 1930s during the Depression, when the County of Los Angeles actually allowed a team to dig underneath downtown Los Angeles to try to find these tunnels, because it was purported that there was large amounts of treasure, gold and, you know, other valuables hidden in certain rooms that these tunnels connected to. So I think they were, you know, at that time during the Depression, times were tough and people just were more open to any sort of idea that could possibly lead to some wealth and fortune for folks back then. So it was just kind
of
the start.
The city of Los Angeles endorsed the search and the digging?
It was, yeah, at that time it was the county which was in control of that you know, those type of permits, and the county blessed it and gave them permits to do digging. I think they gave them some pretty specific parameters that they had to stay within. But this, the guy, George Schufelt, who was in charge of the team, he felt that he really knew where the tunnel started. So he had pinpointed it to a location. But unfortunately, they just couldn't dig down far enough with the tools they had available at that time to get to the level that he insisted the tunnels were at.
Wow.
Because I think when they were digging, they would start the tunnels that they would try to dig immediately filled up with water, which was very problematic. Now, I want to mention something because we had a direct hit last week with Robin, who has marvelous psychic abilities, on the Blue Ribbon. I took the map of the supposed lizard people lair over to her house. And I said, Robin, first of all, is it there? She said, oh, yeah, they just couldn't get to it. That's the first thing she said. I didn't tell her anything else other than, are these tunnels there? She said, yes, they are, but they just couldn't get to them. The first thing she said. And I'm about ready to believe her. Aren't you, Dr. Donaway?
I tell you, Robin is spot on. I mean, I'm naturally a skeptic about this kind of thing. So, you know, I like proof. I like things that I can figure out and rationalize or feel that it's more in the realm of reality rather than fantasy. But I tell you, Robin's pretty darn impressive.
She is, and she's just our friend. She's just a nice lady from Columbia, and she just tends to know things, and they tend to be proven out. And plus, again, for the millionth time, she's one of the nicest people I've ever met, and it's so wonderful having her on the show. She is definitely the queen of scary cast, I'll tell you that. Anyway, back to you, Devin. I just wanted to give a little bit of commentary because I credit where credit's due to Robin. And back to you, sir.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I would love to talk to Robin more about this, the lizard people, because, you know, I think what happened is back in the 30s, you know, they didn't have the proper equipment to really truly dig deep enough. And I think as time went by, you know, people got discouraged. People, you know, it had been in the media a lot. The newspapers covered it. So there's a lot of articles that you can find during the kind of beginning part of it where they were initiating the dig and people were hopeful that something would turn up. And as time went on and they weren't able to locate anything, you know, eventually I think the news cycle kind of moved on to the next story and people kind of forgot about it. But the reality is, you know, these tunnels could still be there because they're so deep that even though there's been a lot of construction that's happened since then, it doesn't go down as far as what you would need to go down tunnels. Obviously, they're not going to put a bunch of gold and jewels, you know, just below the surface. They're going to dig down way deep to protect them and make sure people can't find them. So, you know, I think there's still some possibilities there that would be worth exploring.
And I think that it might be the case that those tunnels are now filled with water, but they're there. And I know it would cost a lot of money to get down there, but, you know, I kind of trust what Robin says. I really do. She didn't know she was going to figure with so much importance on our podcast tonight, and she's not here. But that's okay. We'll let her know next week that she was a real factor in our podcast. And one other thing that I want to mention about you, Devin, is you put together an amazing documentary about the lizard people of Los Angeles. And do you still have that up where people can enjoy it?
Oh, you know what? I know I saved the video, but it was on my Facebook page, which I do not have anymore. So I need to, maybe I'll upload it to, maybe I'll put it on a different website. There are some, I borrowed some videos of other people, so I don't want to step on anyone's toes with copyright stuff. But, you know, there were actually some great videos on YouTube that other people have done that you can, if you just type in LA lizard people, you can see a lot of that. But I will definitely, I definitely have mine saved, and I will, you know, find a way to get that back up online.
All right. Or I'll say this. I've got plenty of space on our server. So if you want me to put it up on our server, just right on ScaryCast, I'll be delighted to do that. Okay.
Yeah, that would be great. I would appreciate that.
Just let me know, and that's something I'd love for Dr. Trey to take a look at. I think you'll enjoy it. I mean, it's a really great piece of work that Devin did, and he spent a lot of time, and I was very happy. And I might just ask for permission from you, Devin, to go ahead. It looks like we're going to be doing the Lizard Man Festival online one more year before we get out to reality and people mingling together. So we might be showing that at the next Lizard Man Festival 2021. So anyway, back to you, kind sir. You are the man of the hour.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I would appreciate that for sure. Because I think there's some more, you know, I could do some more digging and find some more information about that. But another legend that I've been exploring lately that I want to mention is, some of the listeners here know I live in L.A. and I've been here for over 20 years, but I grew up in Kansas. So talking with you all here on ScaryCast got me kind of curious of what legends and what cryptids, you know, I may have missed when I was growing up in Kansas. So I recently learned about Kansas's most famous cryptid, which is the legend of Sinkhole Sam. And Sinkhole Sam is a large snake-like creature. He's apparently considered a Foopengurkle, whatever that is. I'm not sure if you've heard of a Foopengurkle, but apparently that is the name that somebody came up with to describe this being. But it's a large eel-like snake. And what happened is there's a town in Kansas called Inman, and it's close to Wichita, Kansas, so I think most people have heard of Wichita. It's a little bit north of Wichita, and it's just a small town that used to have a bunch of freshwater lakes all around the area. And the largest one, they drained all of them, or they, you know, they were drained at some point, and the largest of those was known as the Big Sinkhole. So that's what they called it, and this was probably back in the 1920s, 1930s, when those lakes were drained. And shortly thereafter, some of the townspeople reported seeing this gigantic snake that was about 15 feet long, about the size, you know, diameter of a tire. And so for a time, the townspeople would go out trying to find this snake, and they wanted to kill it because they were afraid it was going to attack them or somehow eat their livestock or present some sort of a threat to their community. But apparently some people studied it. That's when they came up with the idea that it was a Foopengurkle. That was attributed to a person named Ernest Dewey, who was supposedly a doctor or a person that studied this. He had an assistant named Dr. Erasmus Quattlebaum. And they're the ones that said that the Foopengurkle is one of the most extinct creatures to ever inhabit Kansas. And they told the townspeople not to worry, that the Foopengurkles are actually herbivores. They only eat plants. They don't eat people. And they normally live underground. But because this lake had been drained, this Foopengurkle, Sinkhole Sam, emerged up through, you know, up through the ground and out to where people could see him. So luckily they never did shoot him. They never killed him. He was able to evade them, but it became somewhat of a legend in the area and kind of a tourist attraction for this small town. So it's kind of known as like the Loch Ness Monster of Kansas. And I had not heard of it before, but I'm definitely glad I have heard of it now because I love those type of stories that are, you know, small town legends that people know about in the area, but maybe people from farther out haven't heard of them. So I'm here to let people know about Sinkhole Sam. And he's apparently the most famous cryptid from the state of Kansas. So, John, have you ever heard of a Foopengurkle or a giant snake like this before?
No, I haven't. Now, did you say it was a Foopengurkle or a what?
It's a Foopengurkle. So it's like Frank, you know, F like Frank, Foop, F-O-O-P. Foopengurkle. Foopengurkle.
Well, we've got our medical expert with us, Dr. Trey Donaway. Have you ever heard of a Foopengurkle?
No, I haven't, and it sounds like something that would be removed from anatomy. I just listened to a floop and gurgle. I'm sorry, but your floop and gurgle is aberrant. We're going to have to remove it. It's an enlarged floop and gurgle. I could see telling that to a patient.
Sorry, that is too funny. That is just too funny. That's great. All right, so no floop and gurgles over here. But we have in South Carolina.
Let me back up though. Is that a German or a Dutch name? I mean, what is the derivation of floofengurkel?
You know, I don't know. I tried to Google it, and the only thing that came up was this sinkhole Sam. So I don't know if it was something that, you know, people knew about a long time ago and has kind of fallen out of the lexicon, or if this person, you know, the guy who insisted that it was a floofengurkel, maybe he just made this up or he had heard of it somewhere, but I have not been able to find any record of it pertaining to anything other than this legend of Sinkhole Sam.
And that's spelled F-O-O-F?
F-O-O-P, floofengurkel.
Sounds like a pickle.
No H, yeah. If you Google Sinkhole Sam.
G-E-R-K-L-E or G-U-R? Is that a gurkel with a U or an E?
An E. G-E-R-K-L-E.
Sounds like a pickle to me.
Yeah, and allegedly those were floofengurkels were critters that were known to inhabit subterranean caves in Kansas in the High Plains area. So I don't know known to who, but, you know, supposedly these were creatures that were known to somebody or alleged to exist by somebody.
It sounds like something you'd find in a German bakery. Like,
exactly.
Would you like the chocolate floofengurkel, or did you want to go with the lemon? The lemon floofengurkel is really good this week, you know. I am looking up floofengurkel online, and I do not see a. It's not listed in the dictionary, so maybe we need like a German dictionary.
Exactly.
Well, we're gonna have to come up with a recipe for a floofengurkel and make it, and I'll bet it'll be good.
I'm gonna look up on the translator and see what floofengurkel translates to. So you keep chatting. I'll just do this. This is something I can
do right here
on the phone.
Now, just, you know, in my limited researching that I was doing on this, I found this website that, you know, purports that it's the most famous cryptid from Kansas. But I was just curious to look, you know, is the most, this website's talking about the most famous mythical creatures in each state. So I was curious to see what they had listed for California now that I'm here. And it was very interesting because they list dark watchers as the most famous mythic creature from California. And it talks about them being dark silhouettes that lurk against the sky, often with flowing cloaks, wide-brimmed hats, and walking sticks, which, as Dr. John knows, and I've talked about many times here on ScaryCast, is something that I encountered up in the Hollywood Hills behind the famous hotel, the Chateau Marmont. So it was pretty interesting to me to see that, you know, this is actually a common phenomenon that many people in California have seen and reported. So not just me. Apparently they are common around here, and I know they're in other places too throughout the world, but maybe there's something about the psychic energy here in California that there's more of them here, or maybe they're easily manifesting here more, but I've definitely found that very interesting.
Wow, that is interesting.
Well, back on the foofen, foofen is a Luxembourgish word, and they spell it F-O-O-F-E-N. So maybe it was someone from Luxembourg that called this foofen gurkle, G-E-R-K-L-E, foofen gurkle. Gurkle. It's not immediately translating to English. I don't know what that is. But I think the key might be to find out who in Kansas in the 1930s was from Luxembourg.
Yes. And
it would be an interesting detective series where in search of the Fuffengurkel.
Exactly.
Who's visited with people from Luxembourg, because obviously they do have Fufens there. I don't know if they have Gurkels, but.
Well, one other interesting thing I want to mention about this, the Fuffengurkel and the sinkhole Sam legend is, you know, a lot of times when I hear about something or I read about something, there'll be like a coincidence where I also see something very similar in a completely unrelated forum or topic, you know, little synchronicities where something pops up that you've never heard of or never knew about before, and then all of a sudden it comes at you from a completely different direction. So I had just happened to be watching a few movies after I had my wisdom teeth taken out a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I had plenty of time to sit down and watch some long movies that I had been meaning to watch for a while. And I wanted to watch the movie Dune from 1984, which was directed by David Lynch. And it's kind of the black horse of David Lynch's filmography. He does not really claim it anymore. He doesn't ever like to talk about it. But it was, you know, based on the novel by Frank Herbert, I believe, was the author.
Frank Herbert, great books.
Yeah, so it was a popular book, and, you know, for years they wanted to make a movie about it, and it finally got made in 1984. And in that movie, there's a planet that is inhabited by these large, gigantic snakes that they call sandworms, I believe, that live under
sandworms.
The desert.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So it was interesting because that was about the same time I had heard about this legend of Sinkhole Sam, and it sounds, you know, pretty similar, pretty familiar, a large cryptid snake-like being that lives underground and travels underground. So, and then after I watched that movie, I looked it up, and they're making a new version of the movie Dune that's coming out this year. So it's a good year, apparently, for large, gigantic snake or worm creatures in the spotlight.
Yeah, well, they call them spice worms. And the spice,
yeah.
Spice. Now they're after spice. Mm-hmm. And I watched that movie. I thought it was the new movie, you know, here at home, Netflix, pandemic. You're watching, and I read Dune as a kid, and I loved Dune. I thought it was just a great book. So I was really looking forward to seeing the movie, and I'd read that it was coming out, and I thought this was the new version, but it was the one from the 80s, and it needs to stay in the 80s. It was I can see why it would be the black horse. I think after they made it, they probably instantly regretted it. It was different. Hey, I've got more information on Fuffengurkels.
Oh,
I don't
right.
know what it means, but it is in the Afrikaans language, and they spell it Fuffengurkle. So it's a Fuffengurkel.
Interesting.
Wow. So that's the language of South Africa.
Fuffengurkel.
And it's, oh God, what is it? From the Netherlands. Yeah.
Well, Netherlands would have been, you know, the Afrikaans were from that area of the world. So,
right.
and the Google Translate, Fuffengurkel is a lovely little voice, much nicer than Alexis, but Fuffengurkel, there you go. So maybe it could be related to the Afrikaans. Big.
Very interesting.
Snake, so yeah, just spelled a little bit differently. Have you seen Fuffengurkel in print from the time of the lake drainage?
I have not. I just kind of started my research, so I have stuff that I found online, but, you know, I always want to go back and verify it in print sources from the time if I can. So that's going to be my next that'll be the next project that I'm doing, trying to find.
Yeah.
You know, apparently, it was. I believe there were some newspaper articles about it at the time, so that's what I'd like to get my hands on.
Yeah, because if it's being an anglicized version of Fufengerkel, if that's what it translates to the English, anglicized it, it definitely doesn't sound like an English-stemmed word. It sounds Germanic, certainly. So it'd be interesting to try different pronunciations and spellings to see how you can get Fufengerkel. Well, I'm sorry. We were going to talk more about lizards, and I'm hung up on the big worm, but or snake.
No, that's great, because what you're doing is the same kind of research that our guests next week do. Our guests next week, because it's 9:30, and we got to take a quick station break because WLSC AM and FM. We're so proud to be on here, sponsored by Transamerica, the great life insurance company. And what I can tell you is next week, Noe Torres and John LeMay are going to be on here talking about their landmark book, Early 20th Century UFOs, American Sightings, 1900 to 1919. And you might not think that there are that many UFO sightings, but there were. Gee, it's unbelievable. And we'll have Noe, and we'll have John LeMay, and all I've got to say is I highly recommend this book because it was dedicated to me, actually. That's the craziest thing in the world. But the fine author, John LeMay, dedicated this book to me. And, I mean, it's nuts. So thank you, John LeMay, and we look forward to having you on the show with Noe Torres. Your co-author, and I just love their stuff. I mean, I keep getting care packages.
Well, Dr. John, congratulations. I think it's wonderful that someone dedicated the book to you. That's John LeMay. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
John LeMay, thank you. John LeMay is actually, you know, it's funny. He's our buddy, and he comes on here because he likes coming on here, but he's a famous author. He is well known. He's got over 30 books, makes a living out of his books, and he is just one of the nicest people I have ever met. And yeah, it's really cool. I've never had anything like this. But so anyway, thank you, John LeMay. We look forward to having you on there. And again, the folks from WLSC AM and FM can enjoy this. And it's all sponsored by Transamerica. We couldn't live without Transamerica. So anyway, that's our station break. And yes, next week is going to be another landmark show. We keep having the top guests in the paranormal field. And wait till I bring on here Keith Pacetti. He's coming in about 2 or 3 weeks. He is a master Reiki practitioner. And we talk, I mean, about every day. He is one of the most entertaining people that I've ever met. So you guys are going to get to meet another one of my crazy friends, but he's got a lot of interesting things to say. So just looking forward to so it's going to be good. All right, Foof and Kevin, the show is yours again.
Well, thank you.
No,
that's about
Devin.
Well, that's about all the information I have at this point. So it's, you know, I'm going to definitely follow up and come back with some more, stories about Sinkhole Sam. Maybe I can get a hold of one of my friends from back home in Kansas that has maybe heard more firsthand information about it. I do know some people down in that area, so might have to have some people help me do some reconnaissance missions on this, kind of like I did with the L.A. lizard people when I did that presentation for you last year. I went downtown L.A. and kind of looked around myself to see what I could find, you know, present-day sites. And one thing I did find in that presentation is, you know, there was apparently the L.A. Library, the famous downtown, you know, main branch of the Los Angeles library system, was purported to be over one of the treasure rooms in that network of caves. And there's a lot of interesting stuff at the L.A. Public Library, a lot of weird symbolism, different, you know, it, pretty much everywhere you look at that building, there's some weird symbols or interesting features that that probably meant something to somebody, but we don't know what it means. And it's just a lot of mysteries. There's a whole bunch of history to that LA Library building. So I think that's part of what keeps people curious and interested in these old legends, is when you can actually take things that you can see from the present day and kind of draw parallels back to what they may have mean or how they originated. So there's definitely a lot more studying to be done both with the LA Lizard People and the Sinkhole Sam legend from Inman, Kansas. So that's what we do here.
Oh,
at
I think we're going to have a show just on Sinkhole Sam, because did you know that Sinkhole Sam has his own theme song?
I did not.
Yes. Would you like to hear it?
Without a
yes.
doubt.
Come and listen to a story about Sinkhole Sam, a prehistoric creature near a central Kansas town. Two men, they were a-fishing in a sinkhole, now a lake, when up from below came a spooky-looking snake, 15-footer, serpent-like, subterranean. Now, there are additional lyrics that I will not go into, but I did just discover that Sinkhole Sam, to the tune of the Ballad of Jed Clampett, or the Beverly Hillbillies theme song.
That's amazing.
All right. Now, Devin, when I come out there this summer, can we please record that?
I think we have to.
We absolutely have to. That is the most amazing thing. Oh, my goodness.
I think we could write a similar song for Lizard Band.
We could come out with an
album of cryptid songs.
Well, we really could, and here's what I can tell you: every Lizard Man song that I've ever heard is up from the ground, and you know, just they're terrible. It's all the Ballad of the Lizard Man, and they're all terrible. They're not fun. They're not exciting. Dr. Trey, we're going to work on that. Okay,
I think so, John. I think this is a mission we can get behind.
Well, I think it is. And then we will have the world premiere right here on ScaryCast. And it'll be grand. It will be grand. It will be one of the greatest days in cryptozoology research. That's our song about the Lizard Man. And our song about Sinkhole Sam, that's going to go far and wide. That's going to be one of the best things we've ever done. You're right. This is a project. Devin, do you agree? This is a project. Can you get behind this too?
Definitely. This is very exciting.
And Devin's a musician.
Yes.
As is John too, Dr. John.
I tell you.
Yeah, I think we got it. This is a lot.
It could be the Sinkhole Sam
band. I just like Sinkhole Sam. I like the name. I love that name, Sinkhole Sam.
Yeah.
He's great. Well, Devin, thank you for your contributions tonight. They've been excellent. Dr. Trey Donaway, thank you for your research. You are truly the scientist. You absolutely know how to research and make things happen. So, I mean, that's why we've got you. It's so important to have and if we had the crazy amazing Velvet and Robin McRae, the team would be complete. I mean, we're the best team in the world, and we can probably figure out a lot of things. So anyway, all right, we're going to move on now from Sinkhole Sam and from the Foofengurkle. We're going to move on to the Lizard Man Companion, which still has one more chapter to be written, because I keep working so much I can't get the last chapter written. But we're going to get it done this year, and it's going to be coming out. I've got to have it ready in time for the Lizard Man Festival online this year, so it's going to be a blast. And I want to start my portion of the show. I want to talk about something called Highly Categorical Imperative. I found this in an issue of Fate magazine that had some research. I wouldn't really call it research, It had some stuff about Lizard Man done by some very non-credible skeptics. And I don't like skeptics. I believe either keep your mouth shut or show me some research. Don't do anything else. I don't want to hear about why Lizard Man is dumb. Because I have, in my book, I have over 14 stories from the Lee County Observer that were reported to Sheriff Liston Truesdale. And I am very pleased that, and Dr. Donaway, because with you being in Camden, your local newspaper, what is that, the Chronicle?
The Chronicle. Chronicle Independent.
The Chronicle Independent gave me permission to put them in this book. And I think they did me one of the biggest favors of all time to really lend credibility to the up-and-coming book, The Lizard Man Companion. But anyway, Hyman's categorical imperative says, don't try to explain something unless you're sure there's something to be explained. Well, I am certain there's something to be explained in terms of the Lizard Man. But for all of these, for all these conspiracy theorists, they don't think there's anything to be explained. So why don't they just keep their mouths shut? Whoa, I shouldn't have said that, but it's the truth. Why do they want to talk about something if they're so certain that it's not there? I think that's a grand thing. By the way, there is an Indian tribe in California that put Lizard Man in their story of creation. Lizard Man created thunder, part of the seasons, part of the weather. So they believe in Lizard Man, and it is called Lizard Man. Devin, I need to give you the name of the tribe, and I need to see if you could help me find some additional resources when you go to the LA Library, because I think it's fascinating. And I got very, very lucky that I found and I printed it off. I don't think I could ever find. I don't think it's online anymore, this set of stories. But I think it's wonderful that Lizard Man is considered part of the creation story of a tribe of Indians that were all over California. They really were. So anyway, what I did here in this book is I built on Lyle Blackburn's great book, well-researched book about the story of the Lizard Man. And I want to briefly tell this story because I don't think you can tell this story enough. And I think one thing that really made me feel good about the Lizard Man, we were at the Iris Festival doing caricatures. I used to have a caricature company before COVID hit. We were there, and it was the week before the Lizard Man Festival, and I was passing out flyers and everything, just encouraging people to come, get a free admission with a flyer. And I happened to come across a fifth grade teacher who loves the story of the Lizard Man, because Lee County used to be part of Sumter County. It was carved out in the early 1900s. But she said, you know what? It doesn't matter whether or not the Lizard Man is real. If you graduate from high school in Sumter or Lee County, you at least need to know who the Lizard Man is, and you need to know that that is part of your culture. And I thought that was just a brilliant statement from her. Lizard Man is. The stories that were in the newspaper from 1988 to 1989 and some up through the 90s, they're part of our culture. Who is the Lizard Man? Well, let me tell you the story, and this comes directly from my book. The first name is Christopher Davis. He was a young man who, when he was about 19 years old, he was a McDonald's employee, and he had a flat tire. And the story goes, it was at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, the skeptics start saying, well, why was he out at 2 o'clock in the morning? I can tell you why he was out at 2 o'clock in the morning. As a McDonald's employee, the McDonald's in Bishopville is 24 hours because it's right at the intersection of U.S. Highway 15 and Interstate 20. That is a busy, busy location, especially in the summer. And I hate to tell the skeptics this, but the reason that he was still there, I called the manager. And I said, I'm doing some research. Do you folks ever have people work over on their shifts late at night? He said, absolutely. We have to get things clean so that when people come in at 5 in the morning to cook breakfast, everything's got to be clean. They've got to jump in and cook our breakfast foods. I said, oh. So I asked the next question, which was the most important. I said, do you ever have people work till 1 or 2 in the morning from the midnight, from the shift that would get off at midnight? And you know what the answer was? Yes, we do, all the time. And they know that they are liable to have to work late. So that's part of them taking the night shift, which pays more, because they may have to work late. So all these skeptics that say, oh, wonder what he was doing. Was he busy getting high with his girlfriend? He didn't have a girlfriend at that point. He was a 19-year-old kid. What he did is he played basketball, went to school, and he worked at McDonald's. That's what he did. That's all he had time to do. Devin, I think you are the member of our crew tonight that was closest to high school and college and working jobs. Was, you know, sometimes you had to work late, didn't you? I'll bet.
You know, I worked at McDonald's for years, and there were times when I'd get off work at about, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, go out to the bar for an hour, sleep for a few hours, and be back at 5 in the morning for the breakfast shift.
So what he told me was correct. Okay. So Christopher Davis, 19 years old, and we had some moonshine. And when I say moonshine, we had about a three-quarters moon that night. And he saw something approaching his car as he was busy changing the tire. The tire had gone flat. And he got scared. And what happened was he forgot to put the tire iron in the trunk. He left it on the car and started driving away. And he couldn't drive that fast. And what happened, according to his story that he told Sheriff Liston Truesdale, is that something jumped up on the car, scratched the car, terrified him. But he had a tire iron. He couldn't drive that fast. So it was very possible for an entity to jump on the car. Again, the skeptics want to make claims. They've never been to Lee County. They've never taken pictures of the location. They've never talked to people who talked to Chris Davis. And all these skeptics, they're just wrong. They think they're making so much fun. But that's the whole purpose of the Lizard Man Companion, is to tell everybody, I don't know what it was, but something happened in Lee County and Bishopville in 1988, especially the summer of 88. Something happened there. And it happened to a poor little kid that worked at McDonald's. And he was terrified when he got home. He was absolutely terrified. His car was torn up. And then another thing that happened, and I had to get this information from his cousin who works at the Lee County Public Library. She didn't want to tell me she was his cousin, and she didn't like the fact that I asked her some questions, but she begrudgingly answered them, and it was very important. The research that I did with his cousin clarified a couple of things. First of all, what happened to the car? You got a major piece of historical evidence about the Lizard Man. What happened to the car? Trey, what do you think would have happened to the car?
Take a while body here. Shop, insurance claim.
Okay, Devin, take a guess. Take a wild guess. What?
Would somebody have impounded it for evidence?
No. Here's what happened. The father was so disgusted with the Lizard Man story, and all of the publicity and the fact that his son didn't play basketball that next year, he was too busy going around doing interviews, he junked the car. Got about 50 bucks for it. And he had no clue what an important piece of evidence that he had. I know that it's important, and I have witnesses that have seen the car, and they said it was torn up, especially the roof where Lizard Man supposedly grabbed onto the car. So he has seen it, and he's very trustworthy. So, I mean, I'm pleased to say I have some corroborating evidence along with
now, did
the sheriff.
Did the father believe the son, or was he just disgusted by the whole thing and thought he was making this up because he'd had some accident and, you know, he's making up this story about a lizard man or some entity?
Which way did
the father lean on that story?
The cousin told me that the father was just put out with the whole thing. That's the best that I could get, but that's more than other people had. So he was put out with the whole thing and sold the car. He junked it. And Christopher was upset because his car was gone. And he had to go back to work and buy another car. Dad said, I'm done with this. I'm done with this. That would be a very realistic way that somebody might
a dad-like response.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but a dad-like response. So you've got Christopher Davis working at McDonald's, nice kid, good basketball player, average student at Bishopville Lee County High School, nice kid. So now the investigator. Sheriff Liston Truesdale, trained by the FBI. And here is what the sheriff said about the lizard man, the whole thing. He said, I don't care what other people think about the lizard man, but when these stories were reported, I took them very seriously, because if I didn't and somebody got hurt or killed, I would have been on the
hook. He's an elected position. He wouldn't get reelected.
True, and he took Lizard Man very seriously. And I commend him for that. And Lyle Blackburn, that's something that Lyle Blackburn found out. And it's good that he did. Otherwise, we would not have all of these newspaper stories, thanks to the Chronicle Independent and thanks to the Lee County Observer. So we would not have had all this great coverage of the lizard man. So now we're talking about 1988 and 1989, but especially 1988. So what happened? When was the first sighting of the lizard man? You're going to find it very odd. It was early in the summer of 1988 when a crop dusting pilot named Frank Mitchell. He was out in a field. He was dusting the crops, probably with DDT or something bad, was all, and he saw the lizard man. He saw it out in the middle of the field. He said it looked up at him, and then it took off into the woods. Frank Mitchell was a very credible man. He was about 75 years old. He was a crop duster from way back. He saw the lizard man, didn't know what to say. The next sighting, where was it? At none other than Scape or Swamp. Some guys were building a hog pen in the swamp. Made sense. Makes sense to me. I've talked to some folks that have hogs. They say that would have been a good place to build a hog pen. It was damp. You could go throw food in there, and it stayed damp. A man had a crew of four people. They were working. He was overseeing them. And he looked up, and he saw something with red eyes staring at him, peering around a tree. He was terrified. And he said, all right, time for lunch. It was early, but he let them go early for lunch. Made sure they didn't look back in that area. Said, come on, come on. Brought them out. They didn't look that direction. Said, time for lunch. And they said, it's early. He let them go. Told them to be back at the usual time. He looked back up, and it was gone. Terrified. But he certainly couldn't tell his crew, or they would have been gone, because they were out there in the woods at Skateboard Swamp. So this story did not make it to the books until the third sighting, which was the Christopher Davis episode. And then the gentleman who saw it in Skateboard Swamp, who was building the he was building the hog pen, then he came to the newspaper. And then Frank Mitchell came to the newspaper. And then it started cascading. Total of 14 stories, 14 police reports. Now, Dr. Donaway, you live over there in Camden, Kershaw County. Very, very close to Lee County, correct?
Yeah, Lee County abuts on Kershaw County.
It sure does. Now I'm going to ask you a question. What happened when I went over there to the sheriff's department in both Kershaw County and Lee County looking for the police reports?
They were missing?
Right on time, buddy. They were as missing as they could be. We don't have those. Why? I don't know. That's what
for the,
I heard.
For the same reason that UFOs, although they're not being called UFOs anymore, the UFO reports are missing.
Now, what are UFOs called now?
I can't remember. It's a new term.
I believe
UAP.
UAP, unidentified aerial,
phenomenon
or something. Yeah. It's a UAP
it's like
now.
It's like BC is not BC anymore. What is it? What's before Christ?
Now it's,
what's it now?
Yeah.
CE
now it's,
for Common Era.
Common Era. We're in the Common Era. I guess before it was the uncommon era.
I think they've lost their minds, frankly. But
well,
so,
as an atheist, I do appreciate that because it feels weird to measure time by a figure in Christianity when you are not a Christian yourself.
Okay. Makes sense. I never thought about that. So anyway, that's really how the Lizard Man legend started, okay? And then we come to the Lizard Man Festival. And Dr. Trey Donaway was an exhibitor there. You were there with – what were you there with?
Oh, I was there with a Revolutionary War cannon, because who doesn't love a cannon?
Especially me. And that's how I met you. And you probably
right.
thought I was crazy when I asked you to come to the Lizard Man Festival. And there were 700 people that came to that festival, and it was great. It was a grand time.
Yeah. See, at first I thought you were crazy, and then as I've gotten to know you, I know you're crazy. So that's how it's working.
Well, we know that. I mean, oh, I don't even want to go into last night. I'm not gonna say what happened last night, but I host a podcast. It's kind of getting started, and the podcast is so squirrely. Everybody keeps saying the same things all the time because there's this large group of people on the internet that are in love with this interesting, bizarre concept. It's not a bad concept. It's just weird. Okay, and so I got so disgusted with the podcast in the middle, I just put it on mute for a while, And I came back and they were all still talking, and I figured I didn't miss anything. So, yep, that's how crazy I am. I'm hosting a podcast, and I just went on mute. I said, I don't care about that. And then when I rounded up with everybody at the end, I said, that was great, wasn't it? Yeah, you just let us keep talking and talking and talking. And I thought, uh-huh. You just don't really know. Now, that one's not on an FM station yet. That is, you know, there used to be this group called the Not Ready for Prime Time Players. Well, I think this podcast is not ready for FM yet. I think it may be a while. So anyway, you know, it's interesting. And I've got an interview, a very knowledgeable gentleman. He is a sunken log logger. Do you know what that means? He pulls up logs.
I do. I know exactly
tell us what it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, when logging was done, they would float the logs on a river because that's the cheapest way to transport them. And some logs would not float. They would sink. And these are called sinkers. Huh? You can't make this stuff up. So sinkers go down to the bottom, and they stay in an anaerobic environment. And the water will preserve them very nicely. And when you bring them up, they are just spectacular. Once you dry them up and you can cut them into lumber, and that is where you find some really big trees that are not available anymore, because the trees that goes into the lumber at Lowe's or Home Depot is not the same kind of wood that you were getting 100 years ago. So you can find huge longleaf logs. You can find huge hardwoods that have been floated, sank, and then later on they're recovered. And there are people that go out.
This is
beautiful furniture. This is how they're recovered, and it's spectacular wood. And, you know, when you look at an old piece of furniture, you look at the width of the boards, because people don't let a tree grow long enough today to make these real wide boards. But, you know, you could get 40-inch boards out of some older trees. So this is the only place to get those, unless you're recycling boards. But even when you recycle boards, they're not at 40 inches anymore. So it's a whole industry that's come off of harvesting these sinkers.
Right, and there's a fellow in Bishopville that has a shop, and he's, I have seen tabletops with some of these 40-inch boards, and they're gorgeous. You've probably been over to his shop before, haven't you?
No, I haven't. I didn't know they were in Bishopville. I'd like to visit it. I've got a friend who does furniture, and he uses sinkers, and the wood's spectacular.
It really is. Well, when you go into downtown Bishopville, you'll see the Lee County Observer building on the right-hand side of the road, and right across the street from it, plus or minus a couple of stores, is his gallery, and it's just beautiful. Some of the most beautiful stuff you've ever seen, and he's doing very well. He sells all over the world. I can't remember the guy's name. But here's what he told me. As a man that's experienced with the weather, because he's been a farmer, now he grabs these logs, and he knows all about the weather. And he told me something that I didn't know. I said, tell me a little bit about the summer of 1988. He said, well, I remember the summer of 1988 very well. It was so hot, and it was so dry. And because of the fact that it was so dry,
there was a drought.
Right.
Summer
and
of 88 was a huge drought. I just moved to Camden, and we were on national news because Camden was the heart of the drought. They had to bring in hay for horses, because there wasn't enough growing locally because there just wasn't enough rain. Yeah, that was a huge hot summer. Exactly.
Okay. Now here's what he told me. He said that there was a drought, and because of that, the seawater Okay, when you have rivers that go out to the ocean, salt water creeps inland. But during a period of drought, the seas recede a little bit, and fresh water, the opposite of recede, it comes closer and closer to the ocean. And that is when Lizard Man showed up. Well, there was another drought in 1910. There are stories of the lizard people of Lee County from 1910. And there was another hot, dry time, and it was in the early 30s. More lizard people stories. So what I'm telling you is we actually have a correlation between drought and heat and lizard man, and people seeing Lizard Man. I mean, I would call that probably some of the first real research I ever did was to figure out when do you see Lizard Man. Well, now, I think what's going to happen is it's going to be absolutely bone. It's going to be bone dry this summer and so hot you won't know what to do. And if it is, what's going to happen? I would begin to think that we might see Lizard Man. We'd have some more sightings. And I think it'll be wonderful. I'll be on the lookout. So, I mean, those are some things that a little bit of research and talking to some locals did. Now, the locals in Bishopville, it's a mixed bag. Some of them are embarrassed. They're embarrassed that their town is known for the Lizard Man. Well, Point Pleasant, West Virginia is not too embarrassed. The Mothman and the statue of the Mothman in the middle of town is one of the most viewed paranormal statues in the country. And the Mothman and that festival that they have every year absolutely saved the town from going bankrupt. It's a thriving little town. Have you ever been up in West Virginia in some of those backwards areas? There's not a lot going on, you know? And it's amazing. It's really amazing what the Mothman has done there, and then what Lizard Man could do to Bishopville. But there are so many people that are just embarrassed about it. They say, "Well, we don't want to know."
Well, you know, John,
one
of my favorite restaurants, local, is in Bishopville. It's Harry and Harry Two. Harry's the dad and Harry's the son, so it's Harry and Harry Two.
Yeah.
And on their sign, right off as you exit Interstate 20, and you're on the highway going into town, it's on the right, and you'll see a cook pot, and it's got Lizard Man stirring a cook pot, or I can't remember how he's depicted on the sign. But so some people seem to have a little bit of civic pride about Lizard Man in Bishopville.
Those folks do. And I met them, and they were very nice about it. But a lot of people downtown are embarrassed about it. They really are. And I can tell you that for the first Lizard Man Festival, every business in Bishopville closed on Saturday. The only business that was open was Harry and Harry Two. Did you know that?
Harry and Harry Two's was the only one that was open?
Yes.
What? I tell you that I've never had a Frito pie until I got to Harry and Harry Two's, and it was wonderful. Oh, it was great! In fact, the whole menu, and you know, this is surprising because Bishopville is not like a big town, but Harry and Harry Two's is everything on the menu is good. So if you're ever cruising on Interstate 20 and you want a quick lunch. Right off the interstate is Harry and Harry Two's, and it's great food.
What's in a Frito pie? I've got to know.
It's like they have like taco flavored ground beef and Fritos and some other good stuff. I'm not sure. Maybe onions. I'm not sure what. And then it's all rolled up in a big tortilla wrapper, and you just eat it from one end of the tortilla to the other, and it is good.
And you eat the whole thing, right?
Yep. See, I like tacos, but they're impossible to eat without dropping taco parts all over the place. But this is kind of like a taco, but it's more like a burrito taco with Fritos in it, because everything with Fritos is better. And then you can eat this without making a big mess. Oh, I never had one before. It's wonderful. It was life changing.
Devin, do you agree that everything is better with Fritos? I do.
I totally agree. And you know what? I used to work at a place called Bionic Burger, and we did serve a Frito pie. It was made a little bit differently. It just came in one of those little red baskets, you know, that you would get at a greasy spoon type place. And it was a bag of Frito corn chips, and we would top it with chili and onion and cheese, and they were delicious.
That's what's in it, the chili, onion, and cheese. That's the other things, plus Fritos, all wrapped up in the burrito blanket, and it was really good. I'm getting hungry right now.
Uh-oh, you're getting me hungry. I just ate some chicken salad from my favorite place, which is All American, the sub place up in Laura, South Carolina. I'm going to have everybody up for that. That is the best subs you've ever had. They're incredible. But so anyway, that's a little preview of my book. Plus, you get the 14 stories from the Chronicle Independent little newspaper there called the Lee County Observer. And you know, none of their stuff is online. And I had to take photographs with my phone of the articles. I was there. I actually had to stand on one of them in the middle of the bound book so that I could get the text. I mean, it was unbelievable what I went through to get those articles, but I'm glad that I did. I think it's very important.
Well,
so,
John, what I like about it is you've got the factual information that you pulled out of archives and out of newspaper clippings from years past, and if it was important enough to print then in a series of them, and I didn't realize there were 14 different sightings of Lizard Man along the way.
Yes, sir. Now, I'd heard one story that it was
all a hoax and something, but that would be one story. But this is multiple stories, so multiple people as witnesses kind of makes you wonder.
It does more than make me wonder. It made me write the book, and I'm so proud of it, and I want to get the thing out this year. When it sounds like we'll probably have the Lizard Man Festival online, then we'll be back to business next year, and it's just going to be wonderful. So we're excited about it. I'm as excited about the Lizard Man Festival over here as Devin should be. Devin, we need to put together the Lizard People of Los Angeles Festival. I think that would be a blast, don't you?
That would be cool.
Well, you know, John, I mean, we do have swamps in South Carolina. One of my nurses that worked with me in the GI lab, she came in and she said, "Wow, last night was a wild night." And I said, "Well, what happened?" She says, "Well, my son was supposed to be home by whatever the hour was, and he was not. And he calls me up and he says, 'Mom, I couldn't come home because I hit an alligator.'" And she thought he was just making this up. And, of course, the policeman was there and says, "No, ma'am, we saw the alligator. Your son hit an alligator on the road." But before we could do anything about it, once we arrived at the accident, the alligator just kind of shook it off and crawled into the swamp. So things do happen that you might say is fanciful, but this was witnessed by the policeman. Now, this was just a lizard. This was not a lizard man. This is an honest-to-goodness alligator. So we do have swamps in South Carolina, and we do have alligators. So that's true.
Yes, we do. And I live down here in Ouray County, and we have got more damn swamps than you have ever seen. You have never seen how many swamps that we've got all through Conway, and they're called Waccamaw Backwater and all this stuff. They're swamps. We have tons of swamps over here. And then it lightens up a little bit by the time you get to Florence. But then by the time, then comes Scapor Swamp. that gigantic swamp that covers about a third of South Carolina right there in the middle, and nobody ever thinks about it. And we got Lakeview. Oh, my goodness. Lakeview is – Trey, are you familiar with Lakeview?
No, I'm not.
It's the nastiest-looking swamp you've ever seen, with those big – with those trees that have got large bottoms, and they taper on up. It is
the cypress trees with the knees?
Yes. Oh, and oh.
Well, and of course, we are home to General Francis Marion, the swamp fox, and he had the – he chased the British around in the swamps, or he had the British chasing him around the swamps all throughout the Revolution. So we are known for our swamps in South Carolina.
Oh, yes, we are, and we've got Cypress Swamp down in Charleston. It's gigantic and beautiful. Done some business down there. We've done caricatures there. So, yes, there's swamps all over this place. And then when you get down toward Hilton Head, there's more swamps. So, yes, it's a swampy mess.
And people don't realize, unless you've seen a swamp, it's not something you're going to track anybody in very well, because you just can't go zipping through the swamp on two human legs very well. But if a creature is used to the swamps, it's home for them. So it's definitely not a human element, but it is an element to lots of wild creatures.
It really is. Well, thanks everybody for helping add to my story of the Lizard Man Companion, which will be out very soon. Got to get it out. I'm going to take 2 days off on one weekend, and I'm just going to finish the last chapter. I've got some great stories about Lizard Man all over the world. I've got an incredible story of Lizard Man and our troops in Vietnam, which is just an unbelievable way to finish that book. So I want to say thanks.
Well, congratulations
to everybody. First of all,
congratulations on finishing it up, John. This is exciting.
Well, if I can just get to, I'm going to take a weekend off. I think probably in May. Well, in June, because May is a big month for me. We've got the what do we have? We have the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. And then we have a ghost hunt up at the South Carolina Confederate Museum in Greenville on the 22nd. And we've got I got people coming in from all over the country for that now. And it's just going to be whatever. And I don't want to be out doing this kind of stuff, over Memorial Day. So probably in June, I'll take 2 days off. Nobody will hear from me. We'll finish the book up and call it a day on the Lizard Man Companion, as we probably go into the Lizard Man Festival, which will probably be in the fall, but it'll be getting back into the spring next year, 2021. And then thanks to everybody. Trey, you've been there. I think it was a lot of fun. Devin, if you can ever get over here, I think you'll enjoy it. But we really ought to think about doing a lizard People of LA Festival. I think people would enjoy it. We can do something, and it would be great. So I want to say thanks to my panel tonight. Robin is a hall pass. She's in Nebraska at the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference with Dr. Igor Burtsev. The Amazing Velvet is under the weather, but he'll be here next week. And you guys are such great friends, and I want to say thank you. If anybody has anything else to say, please interrupt me. I love being interrupted. You didn't want to have anything to say?
I'm just looking forward to your book, John. You know, I've been waiting for it for a while now, so I can't wait to finally
read
it.
That's right. You bought a copy. Oh, my God, you bought a copy.
I did.
Yes, you did. Gosh, I've got to get that book out, and I've got to make a hardback and send it to you. That's exactly what I need to do.
And every one of the
I'll make sure every one of the guests has a copy.
American sightings, 1900 to 1996. It's an incredible book. Yes, I think that's a great one. Cowboys and Aliens, and that's a Donald May title. It's just a real privilege to have him on our So we're so glad that he's one of our, just one of our good friends, and he comes on once a month, and he shows no signs of stopping. So we're glad to have him. Thanks to Dr. Trey Donaway, the Surgeon General of Scary Cast, to Devin Tate, our man in Hollywood, or our man in West Hollywood. How's that? And then here I am by myself waiting for the ghosts to come out in dear old Myrtle Beach, and it's been a blast. So, guys, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week on the one, the
Thank
only.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Scary Cast. Yes, sir. Good night, Devin.